Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're live tonight. And the main thing we're going to be talking about will be the UFO Congress that's coming up in a few weeks in Laughlin, Nevada. And that is the biggest one in the world. I've been there several times, and our guest is also been there several times, so we're going to be talking about that. We were hoping to get Bob Brown, the founder of the Congress, but they said he is in Honduras, and he won't be able to speak to us. Okay, let me give out the toll-free number if anybody wants to call in and ask questions. The number is 1-888-815-9756. 888-815-9756. And it'd be good if we stick with the topic that we're covering tonight, and, you know, if you have any questions for our guest or about the conference. Okay, our guest is Richard Dolan. Hi, Richard, are you there?
I'm right here, Dolores. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Has that storm got up there where you are yet?
Well, I don't know. When you live in Rochester, New York, in the winter, every day is a storm. We get snow. It comes from all the way through December to January into February, then March. And then when you think in the middle of April you're out of it, you get two nice, beautiful weeks of springtime, and then wham, you get another final blizzard.
Well, here in Arkansas, we have four distinct seasons, but we just got through with a big, really bad one. It was over 7 inches. But I
the South got hit.
Yes, but it's the same storm that's headed your way. And I just watched the news, and they said it'll be the biggest storm in history that's hitting Washington, D.C. right now.
Good grief. Well,
they
said
2 to 3 feet.
That'll shut the entire city down.
Yeah, that's
what
they said.
No.
They said it's enough to collapse roofs.
Wow.
So it was showing the map and looked like it was going up into New York, so I didn't know if it was headed up your way or not.
Well, we have not gotten any major snow yet, but I will keep my eyes open for that one.
Okay.
And my shovel ready for my driveway.
They said Boston will be completely buried.
Wow.
So, you know, okay. I think it's the same storm that went through here, but I guess it's gathered strength as it went across the country.
Interesting.
So that's not anything to look forward to.
Thank you for the heads up.
The what?
Thank you for the heads up on that.
Okay, because I just saw it on the news, and then I thought, well, you're in New York. Maybe you would be on the edge of
actually,
it or something.
Indeed.
Okay, indeed. Well, I don't know. You can't fight Mother Nature. That's something we haven't learned how to do yet. Okay. All right, well, we're going to discuss the Congress first,
right.
The UFO conference in Laughlin, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their 19th one that they're doing.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been hearing this is the last one.
It's the last one under the traditional management after all of these years. You mentioned Bob Brown earlier.
Yeah,
Bob and the late his wife, the wonderful late Terry Brown, who ran this for so many years.
Yes, I knew Terry very well. I interviewed Bob from the hospital room right before that conference, and that was when she died.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if you know, why is he deciding to stop the conference?
Well, after Terry passed away, the management of the conference really became split between Bob and his daughter Nikki, Nicole Irvin.
Yeah.
And Nikki really is the management. She's actually doing the nuts and bolts management of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I could speak for her, and I don't really think I know all of the reasons why it was decided, but I know that she and her dad Bob decided together that maybe it was time. They received an offer for the conference from a businessman in Phoenix named John Rayo. I know John. I've met him a number of times. And they are going, John and he's got a group of people, Open Minds, they are going to bring the conference to Phoenix. And so this is really going to be the end, as far as anyone can tell. I don't think there's going to be a replacement conference in Laughlin.
I don't see how they can replace it. And
it,
you know,
it was a unique conference.
Yeah, but
in many ways.
I don't see how it can be the same in Phoenix as it is out there in Nevada.
Well, I wish that the Phoenix crew luck, and you know,
yeah.
God willing, I'll get out there one day and do something. But I must say, you mentioned you've been at Laughlin many times. I've gone now, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 times I've spoken there. And lately, it almost seems like every year or every other year, I've gotten invited many times there. And
yes, it's the same way. I've been going there for many years, too. So, you know, we know the situation, and we know Bob very well. He's an old friend.
Well, the Laughlin Conference has always had a reputation, at least as far as I can tell, of being really the most wild and loose of all of the conferences that are related to UFOs. You compare it to, say, the MUFON International Symposium, or even now, like Steve Bassett's X Conference out in the Washington, D.C. area. Those are conferences where the emphasis is very much on a scientific nuts and bolts approach to the UFO phenomenon. Whereas at Laughlin, at the International Congress, I always felt like anything goes. And there are a lot of conservative researchers in this field who just hated that, but other people I know who just loved it. And for myself, I have always had a wonderful time going to the Laughlin Conference. I like seeing all the different attitudes and perspectives that are out there. My feeling is there's a lot that we do not know about this very mysterious topic of whether it's UFOs or anything related. And I'm interested to this day in hearing the wide range of opinions that exist on this topic.
Because there's always going to be controversy between the speakers. You know, some are very strong in their own beliefs. But I think it is good to have a cross-section to where we can hear everything. And I tell people, make up your own minds.
I mean, Laughlin is a place where you basically go for a week. It's a week-long, you know, love fest for all things bizarre.
I think it's the longest one anywhere.
I think so. At least, I don't know if there's any longer ones outside the U.S. I don't think so. Certainly within the United States, the Laughlin Conference is...
I wonder if the Phoenix group is going to repeat the same format or not.
Well, again, not speaking for them, but the word that I've heard is that they are going to shorten it a little bit. It might be a 4-day thing, which is still fairly, if they end up doing that, that's a long conference. Most of them, of course, are just a weekend thing.
Oh, yeah, because Bob decided to make this one longer than it was.
And it worked. For nearly all of that time, I think the conference worked as an extended.
I think the only thing that didn't work was whenever he was going. He did 2 a year for a while, and he had the one in August, which is not the time of the year you want to go to Nevada. So
no,
that one didn't go as well. So he went back to just having the one a year.
Yeah, that was before I didn't really get into the public speaking aspect of this topic until around 2001, which was really the first full year that my first book was out. So during the 90s, I didn't do any of the lectures.
Uh-huh. Well, I was in it back then, so I've been in it, going over there a long time.
Indeed.
But let's tell everybody, okay, this is the 19th one, and give them, you have the dates? I have it in front of me if you don't.
It's always typically the last week of February, and I know that's the case here. February, I think, the 20th. 3rd or 24th is around when it begins.
I've got it here in front of me. 21st.
Sorry. Well, I'm not getting there till a little later, so maybe I'm...
Yeah, that's the same way. I have to be in Hawaii first. Oh, darn. Isn't that awful?
Oh, you poor thing.
To Hawaii in the middle of February.
Oh, I've got the schedule here. Sunday the 21st of February is when it begins.
So I'm going to Hawaii, and then I will come direct from Hawaii to Laughlin. So
nice.
Very so
nice.
I'll be in there a couple of days after it starts, too.
You arrive on, you speak on Tuesday the 23rd, I see.
Yeah, and I'm going to arrive on the 22nd. So the conference goes from February 21st to the 27th. It's a whole week. And it's at the Aquarius Resort. And that's in Laughlin. And if everybody's been there, you know, you fly into Las Vegas and they have a bus that takes you down to Laughlin.
It's a nice little trip. It's actually quite pleasant.
Yeah, there's a whole street of all these casinos, and it's like, yeah, I think it's a big change from Las Vegas. Las Vegas has gotten so commercialized.
You think? Well, Laughlin's fun. It's, you know, that van ride, you can't really fly easily into Laughlin. It's just, I mean, there's an airport, I think, right nearby Bullhead City, but
yeah,
no one flies
across the river.
You got to fly into Vegas and take the van, and it's like a 2 or 3 hour, 2 hours, I think, something like that.
Yeah, it's a 2 hour bus ride.
Right, and
it's fast. Yeah. It's not bad. It goes fast.
I had one driver that I really thought I was going to lose my life. Most of them are pretty good. I had one guy who really loved. He had to have been like a daredevil in his previous career. He liked taking sharp turns, and I was happy to get out of the van when we were done with him. But it's usually very pleasant, and you just drive in from Vegas, and
it's the middle of nowhere. There's nothing at all until you get this little town called Searchlight. Otherwise, there's nothing, no houses or anything.
Oh, absolutely. It's there's one little like convenience store, grocery store stop that they'll usually make. It's a tiny little place, but you can get some water and provisions and whatever, and then hit the restrooms, and then you're back on your way. There's,
yeah, that's the little town of Searchlight.
That's it. Okay, I couldn't remember
yeah.
the name.
Okay,
but
anyway,
fond memories of Laughlin.
This is really interesting because in addition to all of the speakers, and they go, it's just about all day. They have speakers from in the morning all the way through,
right.
Don't they?
That's right. Usually 8:30 or so is where they're going to start. Little breaks here and there, but there's, you know, you get a break for lunch and dinner, but normally they're going to go till about 6 o'clock, sometimes a little later, usually till 6. It's like 8:30 to 6 most days.
Well, it's an all-day thing, and they don't have simultaneous speakers, so that I always like that because then
right.
you don't have to choose which one you're going to go listen to.
That's right. There's no competition that way, and
yeah.
you can really see everyone if you wish to do that.
And another thing I like about this conference, I said it's like the Academy Awards on the last night because they show all of the movies on UFOs, documentaries. People enter these. The ones that they have filmed, and they're really high production films. And
I'm glad you mentioned this. Yeah.
Yeah, during the whole week, they will be showing these, and then people vote on them. And
this is one of the, it's one of the main additional neat features of the Laughlin UFO Congress is this the film festival, and they have what they call the EBE Awards ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And that's for the best one, and it's by committee votes on it. There have been some really excellent entries and winners over the many years that they've done this, and
yes.
that is a highlight
and
of the conference.
That last night when they have the banquet is just like Academy Awards because they are giving out these statues and awards for the best films, and it's really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a nice nice thing to attend.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, let Marvin talk some about some of these speakers that are coming.
Well, I'm looking at the list here. I'm familiar with a number of these people. There's others that I have not listened to, and there's a few that I don't really know anything about. But
that's
they've got
the
some
same
interesting
with me. Comments. I thought maybe you'd have more information. Some of these are old friends.
Well, we'll see here. I'm looking at the conferences starting off with Neil Freer, F-R-E-E-R, and he's got a lecture on Sapiens Rising to Cosmic Citizenship. I do recall having read a couple of papers by Neil Freer that are a little more technical in nature, and I thought this is a very, very, very sharp man. So I've never met him in person.
I don't know him either.
Oh, yeah, you don't. Okay.
No.
Gary Heseltine is speaking. I've met Gary. He's a UK researcher, really good guy, former police officer in Britain. And he's going to be speaking on the history of British police UFO sightings.
Okay. Of course, there's Wendell. Wendell and I go back over 20 years. I've known him forever.
Now, do you know what he's going to be talking about here? His title is called Alloys, the Gorbachev Contacts. And I have no idea what he's going to be discussing in this regard.
Well, whenever he's been on my show a couple of times, and he talks about some of these things that happened that no one knows about.
Regarding Gorbachev?
Where aliens, he says aliens had actually contacted some of these leaders. And, you know, Wendell's always full of very interesting information. So, who knows?
I'm sorry that I'm going to be missing that. I won't be in town. I'll have to get the 411 from someone who's seen it.
Yeah,
I won't be
there on that first day either. Do you know some of these other people then?
Well, I know Danny Sheehan. I know Danny fairly well. He's speaking on Monday in the late afternoon, called his talk is The Essential Philosophical, Theological, and Political Questions Raised by Human Contact with Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Danny's a lawyer. He, in fact, was involved in the Karen Silkwood case, famously, back in the, I guess, 1970s.
Yes, I remember that case. Uh-huh.
And, of course, since the 1970s, has also been involved in various ways in the ET UFO phenomenon. He's a very good public speaker. This is exactly his type of topic. I've listened to him before. He's very much into the ethical and legal and social ramifications of human/ET contact, and I'm sure it will be an interesting talk. There's one earlier in that day that I would love to see. I won't be around for this one either, by a gentleman I don't know named Fred Burks, called Mind Control and UFOs, Who's Really in Charge Here. I really would love to hear this.
I don't know him either, but then, you know, like you said, it's all going to be filmed, and people can even buy the DVDs that don't go to the conference.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm looking him up on the web right now.
Oh.
And he's listed as a former White House insider.
Oh.
That means he might be. A lot of people are listed as insiders who aren't. But
that's true.
Here we go. Fred Burks served for many years as a language interpreter for presidents and other dignitaries, interpreted for Bush, Clinton, Gore, Cheney. Wow. Okay.
Oh.
After receiving a wealth of eye-opening information on major cover-ups, he was inspired to develop his website in October 2002, dedicated himself to getting the word about the cover-ups. So this is about mind control.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Anyway.
I think so. This is someone who does seem to have bona fide connections to the
Always these people out there who are frauds. And in the UFO community, we run into them over the years. But, you know, they don't have staying power. They come in and they get exposed quick enough, and then they don't stay on the lecture circuit that long.
Well, I'd love to meet this man. He seems absolutely fascinating.
Sounds interesting.
There's some others that are a little more of really what you get at Laughlin. There's a woman named Judy Goodman talking about contact and a soul's purpose. And then another woman, Ann Ellers, about dragon in the sky, that is prophecy from the stars. And this is really the other side of what you get in the Laughlin conference. It's not something that you get at a MUFON conference, but you get it at Laughlin.
Mary Rodwell is an old friend of mine, and she's going to be there again.
Now, I know Mary. I've met her, and she's a very, very lovely lady.
Yes, we've worked together in Australia. I've been to her house and her group many times when I go to Australia, and we have worked together on different cases and things and different theories and concepts.
And if I'm not mistaken, she's done a lot of work with people who at least have allegedly been channeling ET entities. Am I right there?
Well, she is a hypnotherapist. She has done a lot of work, and she had a video that won a first prize at the conference a few years ago, and it had to do with drawings that people were making.
Yeah,
but she is her book is about the new children, like what they call the indigo children. So she's done a lot of investigation with that also.
Interesting.
But we've worked a lot because we're finding. People are getting information they don't know where it's coming from, like symbols and mm-hmm. things like that, that they feel compelled to write and draw these things, and we don't know where they're coming from. But yet, when I've compared what I have been receiving from people and what she has gotten, they match. So we were thinking of having somebody like a computer genius try to compare these and see if there's anything there.
Now, you're speaking on Tuesday, Dolores. What are you going to be talking about?
Oh, the three waves. And this is something that I've found is going in my new book, The Convoluted Universe, Book 4. You know, I've got 15 books out there. And this is a new theory that I think is the missing piece of the UFO phenomena. But I'll be telling it. I've talked about it on my show before, and I did the George Nuri's show a few months ago about it.
Okay.
But I'll be talking about it that night. People who are listening know what it is. It's the three waves of people who don't know their mission here, but yet it's in their subconscious mind. But I know Mary very well, and of course I know Barbara Lamb. You know, we're old friends.
Indeed.
Too. Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
Is she? I'm looking for her name on this list. Is she a speaker at this? There she is.
Yeah, she's a speaker.
She's right before me.
Is she? Okay,
she is.
She has been working with the crop circles for many, many years,
mm-hmm.
taking groups over there to them, you know, and seeing those.
Right.
And I've also been a crop circle investigator since about the early 90s. So we have worked on that, you know, the crop circles.
I see.
And she has been to a lot of these shows. Her and Mary usually pop up about every year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Donald Ware is also a good friend of mine.
Well, I know Donald very well. I've met with him at many, many of these types of gatherings. He's a real gentleman.
I'm looking down the list here. I've known him for a long time. Well, Travis Walton usually doesn't come to these.
He's been a little more public lately. I saw Travis last year in Roswell, New Mexico. I had a very pleasant discussion with him. And, of course, unless someone's been living in a cave for the last 40, 35 years, Travis had probably the most famous abduction case of all, the so-called the famous Fire in the Sky case made into a movie and written about and discussed. One thing I can certainly say about Travis, having spoken with him and his wonderful wife, Dana, at length, is that they are both very lovely people, very soft-spoken. Travis is not someone who, you can tell, he does not seek attention. This is really not his personality. He just had something very extraordinary happen to him as a young man.
Mm-hmm.
And got angry at the accusations of hoaxing and fakery, certainly, but he's a very private sort of individual.
Yes, and he's been out there long enough in the public eye. If anything was phony, it would have come to the surface by now.
I think so. I agree. And he's had, of course, famously, many of the co-workers who were with him. They're still around. No one has said it was a big hoax. They've all taken polygraph tests and so forth.
The only thing I didn't like was the movie. It was exaggerated. It wasn't really, they went off of what the book was about.
I completely agree with you, Dolores. I saw the movie as well, and there's one scene in here where he's inside the craft. Now, the funny thing is Travis was very, very clear about how he described his little that he could remember.
He described it very clearly. In his book, he had drawings, and the drawings were not like what they had in the movie at all.
No, in the movie, he's floating around in this bizarre, huge kind of container, whatever it is. Bizarre, freak show stuff.
But
the movie had
some
good points, though, actually. I thought the movie wasn't all
bad. Yeah, but right after that, when that movie was coming out, he was on some talk show. And somebody in the audience said, oh, Travis, you sold out, didn't you? And he said, well, you know, Hollywood, they're going to take it and they're going to change it.
So
what happened. They made it into bizarre and dramatic, away from what the real story was.
Well, yeah.
But that's Hollywood.
Absolutely. Sad but true. But he's a real gentleman, and I'm glad that he will be speaking on Friday, on the 26th. I wouldn't want to overlook a lady that I know fairly well, Melinda Leslie.
Okay.
She's speaking the day before that. Melinda is someone who's been involved in one of the more controversial parts of the UFO conspiracy aspects, and that is the military abduction phenomenon. There are people who claim it doesn't happen, but there are others who are insistent that it does. Melinda has been talking for years about how she has been one of these abductees, and she'll be speaking with a woman named Niara Isley, who is also, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, says that she is a military abductee, and that I, from what I've heard, she's a very articulate lady also. So they're speaking.
Well, I know Leah Haley is one that's on the circuit, and she's kind of gone into the background lately, but she also claims she was, and this was happening to her.
Yes, indeed. I know Leah, and she's also a very decent human being. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of these people who, in fact, once you get out into the public realm like I have done, I have people come to me all the time who will say, here's what happened to me. And these are people who've never gone public. There are a large number of people, they don't want to go public.
I know.
Who believe that they've had things like this happen to them. A shockingly large number.
I'm a therapist, and I see clients constantly, and I've seen thousands and thousands of clients, and that's what I write my books about, what I discover. And I hear stories all the time that they're telling me, I can't talk to anybody about this, but it really did happen. They're afraid somebody's going to think they're crazy. So I hear lots of stories that don't get around, and I know these things are real. They are possible.
There is so much that goes on below the surface of our society. You know, remember when we used to learn about earlier societies, like the Victorian era, and we learned how hypocritical they were, that everything was so rigid and proper on the outside, but then all of this undercurrent of other things going on below. Our own society, I think, is exactly the same way. We have this facade where everything is, you know, like these other things don't happen, but yet when you really scratch below the surface, my God, what kind of world are we living in?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more out there than people think.
I
did the UFO conference in, it was right near Blackpool, the St. Anne's, England. I did that in October.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big one, but they have several in England.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you know, you get to know all the people that are the speakers on these circuits.
Right.
Okay. Is there anybody else on here that you
I know? Absolutely. I know a number of these other people here. Michael Horn, Paola Harris, Jaime Musan, Santiago Garza, and David Cereda. I know them all.
Okay.
They're all speaking Saturday. I've met them all. Stan Romanek, we shouldn't overlook him. He's speaking Thursday. Stan Romanek's been very big in the UFO news in the last year. For a alleged encounter that he has had, including photograph and video evidence of an alien.
Okay.
That's been a big thing. Not everyone agrees that it's legitimate, but people have interviewed Stan. People have mentioned talked to him, and he sounds very sincere, I must say.
Yeah, because there's a lot of controversy in this. That's why people have to make up their own minds.
Well, you've got basically these impossible stories, but then, you know, the people who tell them seem to be legitimate. They seem to be genuine. Of course, some of them aren't. So
well, that's what I like about Bob Brown's conference is they have a good cross-section
of
everything to do with the UFOs.
Everything in the kitchen sink tossed in there.
Yeah. You know, we have ours that we put on here in Arkansas. This is now 23 years we've been doing it.
Are you talking about the Ozark?
Yeah, that's one up here in Eureka Springs.
I'll be there in about a month and a half. I'll be
April.
There
because I've been helping with it since the beginning.
I'll see you there,
I'm
then. I'm looking
there.
That's another good one, another venerable one.
Yeah, we say that this one is like the second largest outside of Laughlin.
What, the Ozark one?
It's been going on 22 years where we just had one little room of about 50 people, and I've watched it grow the whole time.
Yeah,
and
that is a lovely place.
We have some
place,
of the same speakers. You know, we have Wendell every year. We have Linda Mutenhall.
Yeah.
It's all sometimes the same ones come back every year. And Timothy Good comes from England every
year. Yeah.
So anyway, but I don't want to focus on that. We'll talk about that later on my show as it gets closer.
You bet.
But I think on this conference, we got a pretty good cross-section, and I think people, they won't be disappointed, that's for sure.
I agree. I know probably a good half of the people who will be speaking there. And it's a very, very smart group of people, very interesting group of people. I think that attendees, the nice thing about any of these conferences is you get to meet and have lunch frequently with these individuals who sometimes you've read their books or seen them on YouTube, and now you can meet them in person and ask questions of them. What you find if someone hasn't been to these conferences is I would say most of the time the speakers tend to be very accessible. For myself, I can tell you, I'm always very accessible when I do a conference, and I'll be arriving at this one on Thursday, which is the day before I speak. So I'll be there all day Thursday, all day Friday, all day Saturday.
Okay.
And anyone who runs into me on those days, I can guarantee you, if you have a question for me, I'll gladly spend as much time with you as I reasonably can. But I'm always very available, and I think most of these speakers are.
See, I'm the same way. We have a book table in the vendors area.
Mm-hmm. I remember chatting with you at your table.
We'll be there on maybe Monday night. So, you know, I'm coming from Hawaii, so it'll be Monday night before I get there. But otherwise, people always come up and talk, you know, and that's what it's all about. You can't be exclusive or reclusive at anything like this.
No, it's a lot of work. It's fun, but to be a speaker or an organizer at these conferences, it's a demanding.
I have my own conference I put on in Arkansas in June, and it is a lot of work. Okay.
Yeah.
Let us get to you.
Sure.
Okay. I think we've covered pretty much on the conference, and it's going to be a good one. Especially, this is the last one, so you don't want to miss it, because you'll never have a chance to go to Laughlin again and experience this, what Bob Brown puts on. This is the last chance to go.
That's right.
Okay, Richard. Now, with you, I always like to start with background. You have a background as a history major, wasn't it? A history expert?
Well, I was working on a PhD in history at the University of Rochester when I got the UFO bug, I guess you could say.
I was thinking, how does a history enthusiast get into UFOs?
Well, I got into it because I looked at it as a historical phenomenon. Back in the early 1990s, before I did anything with UFOs, I was studying Harry Truman and the Cold War, and that was really my big focus. 1994, 93, 94, that was it. And I recall two real things that got me into this. One was the young internet. There wasn't much of a World Wide Web, but there were news groups and bulletin board systems that were, many of them were UFO-oriented. I remember just going through some of those and reading some very interesting debates and articles and things that were put out there. Another thing that turned me, though, was being in a bookstore and seeing Timothy Good's Above Top Secret and sitting up on a display.
Uh-huh.
The subtitle of that, of course, is The Worldwide UFO Cover-Up, and that intrigued me, and I remember to this day just flipping through the book, recognizing many of the names that Tim Good had written about, Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, CIA Director Roscoe Hillenkoetter, and all of these other people who had been in my research in a very conventional sense. Here's Tim Good writing about them in a connection with a UFO cover-up. And I thought, well, wait a minute, whoa. I didn't even want to know at that point if UFOs were real. I was at a much more conservative point. But I just wanted to know, is this legitimate? Were they as interested in this topic as it appeared in that book? Because if they were, even if it was a mistake, well, I thought, well, that's very interesting. Why have I not read about that in any academic history book? And so that was really the question that drove me in my the first year in this. It was kind of the way that I used it as a wedge to open up the topic. So I thought I would take a couple of months out of my life and just satisfy for myself what I thought about all the UFO claims, because we'd all heard about claims of conspiracy mm-hmm. and so on. Well, so once dove in, I stayed in. I became persuaded very early on that there was something to this.
So you really didn't get into this until the early 90s then?
Early to mid-90s. It was 94 when I really got turned around. And I didn't start doing serious research on this until, 94, 95. By early 96, my research had gotten to a point. Here's the thing about me. I'm a very quick student on things. Like, when I dive into something, I have a lot of energy, and I'm not afraid of working hard. And I threw myself into the UFO topic. I can tell you that. It became my obsession. And so by even 96, I was at a point where I felt I had a handle on this. And that my notes at that point started to develop into the book that I ended up writing. And that book is called UFOs and the National Security State. I finished the first volume of that study in the middle of the year 2000. It took a few months for that book to get known because nobody knew who I was. But the word started getting out, and the next thing I knew, I'm doing radio interviews and speaking engagements.
I've been in the UFO phenomena since the 70s and the 80s.
Yeah, well, much longer than me, certainly.
Yeah, I was writing my first investigations were in the 80s, and that was with Lou Farish, you know, before they even started the conference.
Well, I didn't have a strong interest as a younger person. By the time in 94, 95, I was in my early 30s. All through my 20s, I just wasn't involved in this at all. I was doing graduate work and engaging in other pursuits.
You were
But I think I made up for lost time.
You were going to have a normal life up until that point.
I guess. The thing was, I don't think I was ever comfortable with a normal life. I think this field really pulled me right in. I truly believe that. Since 2000, I've gone, that first volume has gone through two editions, and I just finished my second volume. It's taken a long time. This is a 600-plus page book, and it continues the history of the UFO reality and cover-up. This now covers the years 1973 to 1991, the end of the Cold War.
Okay.
It's an absolutely fascinating part of our history, and if I may say, I think this is a first ever true history of the UFO phenomenon during this period. It's really three books in one, the way I look at it. It's a very clear compilation of the major encounters themselves. So, for example, the Travis Walton case of 1975 is described in my book, and a whole lot more. So you could just use it as a reference in that regard. But the second strand...
Looks like the first book looks like it began with the 1941. That would
be the
early sightings.
That's right, yeah. It's really what I've done is a history of the modern UFO phenomenon. And the other major theme that I've done in this book is the politics of the UFOs. In other words, trying to look at, is there an attitude that we can discern from the political and military groups and the intelligence community?
Okay.
Are they interested or not, and so forth? And then, and that's all very interesting. And then the final theme of my work, I guess you could say, is the history of our own research, the history of our own consciousness in trying to understand it. That is the history of ufology itself. And I do believe that this is a first-ever history of ufology. I don't believe it's been done anywhere else, and I do try to incorporate that in this book as well. And it's all woven together as best I can do.
I respect research because I do a lot of research on my books. So, I love it, but I think you have to if you're going to do this kind of work.
Oh, you bet. I was lucky in that I have access to a very, very substantial body of primary literature on this in terms of all the old journals, not just the MUFON UFO Journal, I think, which I've read every single page of, but the defunct APRO Bulletin. I've got all of those, and the International UFO Reporter, and a whole bunch of others that I didn't even know existed until I acquired them all and read through them. So I feel like I gained a very, very good firsthand. And then I did many, many interviews for this book. I really talked to a lot of
Well, you know, if you had much contact with Lou Farish.
Well, I've known Lou simply because I've spoken at the Ozark conference a few times now.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, I mean, I cannot say that I've worked with Lou or really had a lot of detail to a lot of time.
He's the one I've been working with, I guess, since the, it'd be in the early 80s anyway. But
right.
He had a tremendous library of books on UFOs, and he was collecting them constantly. His whole house was just full of books. So I was thinking anything you needed to know, he would have access to it. And he has this memory of all these cases. So he's a walking encyclopedia himself.
There are, every now and then, there are people like that, the people who just amass this immense library. I'm getting to that point myself. I don't think I'm at the point of some of these, some of the old-timers who've got thousands of UFO books, but I'm approaching 1,000.
Well, Wendell, too, has the largest, Wendell Stevens has the largest photograph collection in the world.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, he's been at that a long time, too.
Well, he has. You know, in Wendell's case, if I'm not mistaken, he's developing, you can ask him this yourself, but I think he's working on an arrangement where a large part, some or all of his collection, will be going to the Open Minds group that is, in fact, going to be taking over the conference, the Laughlin Conference.
Oh,
I think it's the same group that I think has worked on an arrangement with Wendell to house his library, which is very substantial indeed.
I was trying to think of the one that's out in North Carolina.
George Fawcett, yes.
All of his work went to the Roswell Museum.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know.
Because he had to get rid of it, and he had a huge collection
of
papers, everything, going back many, many years. And they've had it now. He donated it to the Roswell Library at the Roswell Museum, and it's been there now for about five or six years. Anyway.
Well, one book that he did not donate is my newest book, which he has in his house because he bought it. And I would like to just mention here, because I'm very proud of this, George Fawcett recommended my book to a very good friend of his, a gentleman out on the West Coast. That gentleman wrote to me and said, you know, George told me that of the, I think it was some exact number of UFO books he read, like 3,000 or 4,000 and something, whatever. Of all those books he read, he told me that yours, Richard, was the very best. And I kid you not, I have the letter to prove it. And that's my latest book, so I thought,
now,
cool.
That's coming from a really good source, because George has just, you've been doing this for so long, he's read everything. So that's a good recommendation.
I take it as the best. I was very, very pleased to get that.
Okay. All right, but about your work now, is it just research, or have you come to conclusions, or what do you want to say about it?
Well, I do both. I research. I'm not afraid of coming to a conclusion. Conclusions can be wrong, but if things turn out to look the way I think that they look, then I'm happy to say that's how I think they look. In my case, what I think has been going on is you can look at the UFO phenomenon on a variety of levels. Level number one is what I can say we know is true, based on undeniable historical documentation. And what I would say is what we know is true, without a shadow of a doubt, is that there is a phenomenon that the militaries of this world have been encountering and indeed have often been chasing. This phenomenon appears to be technology, at least at times.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it may not appear to be like that, but there are times when it certainly appears to be technological. These things are often tracked on radar and other types of electronic instrumentation. They're seen visually. They are have been seen violating sensitive airspace where they're not supposed to be, and then looking unusual, i.e. disc-shaped, and doing the impossible, zigzagging, stopping, taking off instantly, and so forth. All of these we know is the case because we have many, many military reports that explained it in very clear terms. These are reports that were written very seriously that describe these encounters. Now, if you read one or two, you might think, well, maybe the pilots just mistakenly misinterpreted some natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
But what happens when you get 50 or 100 of these reports, or 200 of these
reports? And even more.
And more, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and then on top of that, of course, you have a lot of people within the classified world who, this is a very difficult thing for them. They sign security oaths. They come from often families of military where the tradition is you don't give away the secrets, but yet some of these people encounter secrets that are so awesome, so overwhelming that they have to tell somebody, but only on the condition of anonymity. Now, this is difficult for the outside world to accept, but that's the way it is. And so based on the known factual database that we have, and then also based on a number of these individuals who have come forth, I will say to you what I think, what it looks like, and what it looks like to me is that we human beings are of intense interest to a variety of intelligences that have come here from elsewhere, wherever that is. I don't know where that is. Does that mean they're from another planet? Does that mean they're from another time, another dimension of reality, from under the oceans? I can't tell you for sure. They're from somewhere that's essentially not here, but they are here.
Okay.
That's what I believe.
But see, Richard, you know, I've written four books on this, so I have definite conclusions. But
indeed you do.
It is way beyond what the normal person can even imagine.
Right.
But you also know Bob Dean, don't you?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, he's an old friend. And
Bob is one of my favorite people.
And I'm really glad he did come out and lecture last year, because he had gone into, he kind of withdrew from everything and thought his life was over. And we were talking to him and said, you have a lot to contribute yet. And he spoke last year at the Laughlin Conference.
He has a lot of
information. A lot of it does deal with the military.
Right.
You probably know some of the things he said.
Well, I've been fortunate, and I've spent time with Bob. He and I really like each other very much. I feel very close to him personally, and
he's a really nice person.
He is, and he's become somewhat iconic, I would say, in the field in the last few years.
Yeah.
I think people have really come to revere him. His YouTube hits sure blow mine out of the water, so people want to hear Bob Dean. But he's just such a gentleman.
I've known him 20 years, and all those 20 years he keeps saying, I'm going to write a book. And I said, you need to do it. And he said, yeah, but every time I get going on it, then things change, and I don't know if it's going to be right or outdated before I get it finished. But you got to do it. A writer knows you have to start it. You got to, no matter what it is, you got to get going on it.
Well, the name of the game is, you know, after you write anything, you look back and think, oh, God, I wish I'd done that a little differently. I've certainly had that.
Everybody does that. I think every writer does whenever they start looking back at it. Do you find things you would have changed, or your mind yourself changes?
Yes.
In my books, my books came out in the 80s, the first ones did, and I wrote them at the beginning of the 80s. And some people like to read them in the order I wrote them, because they said they could see how I changed in my belief structure. We all do. We're human.
Right.
And I think that's part of it. You know, we look back and say, well, that's what I thought then. But if you wait, you're never going to get it on paper. You're never going to get it
written
down.
Agree completely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is part of keep writing, keep updating and writing more. Anyway, keep it going.
Well, I haven't written as many books as you have, Dolores, but my books are very long, I'll say that. So 500 and now 600 pages, I see no end in sight.
My Convoluted Universe books are 600 and 700 pages.
Oh, my God. Well, okay, I bow.
I've written three of those, and I'm working on Convoluted 4 now.
Good grief. Well, I assume you're just writing all day.
Well,
is that
no,
what you
I
do?
Run my... I run my publishing company because we have 45 other authors that we publish, and I have to do that. I'm doing that. I'm seeing clients constantly as a therapist. I travel all over the world lecturing and giving my classes, and then I have a weekly radio show. So
well, you know, you're doing the kinds of things that I enjoy. I've actually started publishing other people's books.
I published
my own book. And I've got one other author now, and I'm working on a second. And I think that, you know, if this works out, I'll take some other books as well. Who knows?
Okay. I write at night. So I'm doing all of that during the day and writing at night.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you find your passion, it just becomes all-consuming anyway.
Yes.
That's just what you have to do it. You cannot not write.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
You cannot
completely.
Not do this, you know. That's what I tell people. You find your passion, what you really, really want to do, and that's the most important thing in your life.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more.
It does become all-consuming.
Yeah.
That there's so much out there, and every time I think that I've heard it all and there's nothing more to learn, then I find something new. So it's still evolving. But that's
Absolutely.
What life is anyway. Life is an evolvement. It's change. Okay.
Words of wisdom, I agree completely.
Okay. But anyway, I'm trying to think. We've still got a few more minutes here.
Well, I can give a little heads up, a little overview on what I intend to talk about on Friday.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Talk about
minutes.
That.
My talk is titled Looking Back, Looking Ahead Toward a New Understanding of Exopolitics. I still actually have to finish putting this one together, to be honest with you, but I do know what I'm going to be saying.
Yeah.
For the last number of years, I've often been brought into or included in discussions that have to do with what's called exopolitics, and that's simply a recent contemporary term for the relations of us and them.
Richard, why don't you explain what exopolitics is? Maybe some of the listeners won't know what you mean.
Indeed, absolutely. It's a phrase that's been coined in the last 10 years. It typically refers to the relationships of humans with non-humans, non-human ET or alien intelligences that are here. The idea of exopolitics is that it would follow a formal disclosure of the ET reality. So in other words, a president or some other big shot says, apparently UFOs are real and some of them are extraterrestrial and they're living here. So what follows after that would be exopolitics, that how we relate to these other beings and everything that involves.
Okay. So it does involve the government then, too, that word does.
I think it does. I think most of the discussions of exopolitics would involve it to some extent, yes.
We only got a few more minutes. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say that I've been not always particularly happy with how a lot of these writers on exopolitics have gone about describing what they've discussing the topic. And really what I'll be doing is to try to give a different view of, I think, a productive view of what I would consider a useful exopolitics. And I think, I don't know anyone else in the field who really is talking about exopolitics who shares my perspective. So I think for that reason it'll be useful. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, we're coming to where we're going to have to end. Tell the listeners how they can contact you if they want to contact you.
Absolutely. Well, my website is probably the easiest way. My website is keyholepublishing.com, just like looking through a keyhole, KEYHOLE, publishing.
Okay.
And through that, it's very, very easy to reach me. I'm pretty easy to get to hold of.
And you do encourage people to email you or...
I do. Keep in mind that... I try to get back to everyone promptly. I sometimes succeed at that, and sometimes I don't.
There's no way. I can't answer all the emails. There are just too many.
Yeah.
And I always apologize for that, but, you know, we're only one person.
That's the problem. I don't have a full-time secretary doing this stuff for me, unfortunately. It's difficult if you want to get all of your other work done.
Yeah,
the emails are difficult at times.
We're just getting too many anyway. Okay, but so they can contact you at keyholepublishing.com.
That's right.
Okay. All right, and we want to remind everybody the conference is the 19th conference, and it is the last one to ever be held by the Bob Brown Organization in Laughlin. It's February the 21st to the 27th, and it's at the Aquarius Hotel. They say resort, but it's a big Aquarius Hotel and gambling casino there in Laughlin. So we hope everyone will turn out, because this is going to be big, because it is the last one. Okay. All right, Richard, and I thank you for coming on the show tonight.
My pleasure, Dolores.
And we'll see you in a few more weeks, really.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, good night, everyone, and thanks for listening.
Thanks.